Your radio show host has traversed the planet, teaching as many as possible the modern dentistry ways of today. Biomimetic best practices that avoid invasive procedures. And that means shocking many dentists who have always thought the crowns and root canals were the natural order of the patient's progression. Dr. Shoup and the Microscope Dentistry team is disrupting that natural order. If you want to avoid cavities for the rest of your life, if you don't want to hear your dentist say you need a crown or a root canal ever again, you need to meet Dr. Shoup in person. You're listening to the Dr. Shoup Show. Hear and see more at ddsradio.com. Here's Dr. Randy Shoup.
Well, hello, everybody. It is great to have you here. Thank you very, very much for deciding to spend another hour with me. This is where you go to learn things you are never going to learn anywhere else. You are going to be certainly the most educated, the smartest, the most savvy dental, medical, health, wellness, nutrition, knowledgeable person that you could possibly know. And we give you the information here that you need to make really good, high-quality decisions so that you can live a long, happy, and healthy life. It's what we're all about. If you have listened to the program, you know how we do this. We start in dental school. And today we're going to find out, was dentistry one of your New Year's resolutions? And if that is the case, why this year? What makes this time the right time? Why not last year? Why not kick it down the road to next year? We're going to delve into kind of the decision-making process and help you think through the process of how do I get healthier right now? And in Ask the Expert, you've heard about the expression catching lightning in a bottle. You've heard somebody talk about it's like walking on the sun. Well, those two things are actually much closer to reality than you have even the wildest imagination about. I'm going to tell you where those things are happening right here on good old planet Earth. It's fascinating and really, really out there in the science fiction world, but it's real. And you get to meet my good buddy Adam. Now, several years ago, Adam made a big investment in himself, improving his appearance, improving his look, and that investment has paid massive dividends for him. He had a bit of an accident, and he drove 3 hours one way just because he knew Uncle Randy was the only person that could fix this glitch. And he'll tell you really fascinating and amazing story. And if you ever complain about, well, you're 45 minutes away, or you're a half an hour, or I got to drive an hour, this guy drives 3 hours one way just to come see me. It's a real cool story. But first, what makes a smell a smell? How do we identify smells? What makes one thing smell like one thing and something else smell like something else altogether? How would you figure this out? You'd go to a bunch of scientists and you'd look at humans? No. How about locusts? I'll tell you all about it right now.
Time to go under the microscope.
It really makes you think. Think.
Well, of course, any of our senses are simply the manifestation of electrical signals that go to our brain. So let's say you smell a certain substance. That smell is recorded in your brain, and every time you smell it subsequently, you'll remember it. You know what it is. How does that work? Let me tell you. The surprisingly simple arithmetic of smell. Adding and subtracting certain neurons tells researchers whether or not a locus can smell an odor. Locus meaning grasshopper, So yes, these scientists are doing all this work on smell research on grasshoppers. Listen to this. Smell it inside or outside, summer or winter, in a coffee shop with a scone, or in a pizza parlor with pepperoni, even at a pizza parlor with a scone, coffee always smells like coffee. Why don't other smells or different environmental factors get in the way, so to speak, of the experience of smelling an individual odor? Coffee always smells like coffee, no matter what the circumstances. Researchers at the McKelvey School of Engineering at Washington University in St. Louis turned to their trusted research subject, the locust, to find out. Yes, they work on grasshoppers. What they found was surprisingly simple. According to Barani Rahman, who is a professor of biomedical engineering, their results were published in the Journal of the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Rahman and the colleagues have been working with locusts for years, watching their brains and their behaviors related to smell in an attempt to engineer bomb-sniffing locusts. Yes, they have been working for years to figure out, can they train gigantic swarms of locusts, turn them loose over these fields that are covered with landmines or explosive munitions of some sort that have been dispersed across jungles or whatever, if they can get the locusts to accumulate big groups on top of these explosives. A, if the explosives go off, it's some grasshoppers. But if they don't go off, you know where they are. Fascinating. Along the way, these researchers have made substantial gains when it comes to understanding the mechanism at play when it comes to locust sense of smell. To understand how the locust can consistently recognize smells regardless of the context, they took a cue from old Dr. Pavlov and his Pavlov dogs. Locusts were trained to associate an odor with food, their preference for food being a blade of grass. So after going days without food, a locust was exposed to a puff of odor, the puff of hexanol or some sort of acetate compound used in explosives. Then they were given a blade of grass. In as few as six such presentations, the locust learned to open its mouth in the expectation of a snack after simply smelling the training odor that these scientists were using. Just like recognizing coffee, the trained locust could recognize the odor of explosives and did not let any other factors interfere with it. So, the algorithms that the researchers discovered was that you can think of it as there are neurons that the smell triggers that will trigger an on signal for the evidence of the existence of the smell. There are neurons that, if activated, tell the smeller that the scent is off. So it pretty much is like a minus or a plus. It's an on or an off. So the researchers have figured out that in locusts, grasshoppers, and in humans, there are two basic neurons that control registering and recognizing smell. One says the smell is here, and the other neuron says the smell is not here. So when it is triggered on or off, your brain knows what you're smelling. They were surprised to find that this research and the calculations of smell was actually so simple. So now we know, thanks to a grasshopper, how you and I can recognize coffee no matter where coffee is. And if you want to really go crazy, you can learn how to sniff bombs. That's up to you. Now, Up next, is dentistry one of your New Year's resolutions? What makes this the right time? We're going to talk about it right after this. And that's all
you need to know. You're listening to the Dr. Shoup Show. Exclusive insider info, audio, and video is online now at ddsradio.com. You know, there's not a lot of quality free education out there these days. That's why Dr. Randy Shoup loves delivering his insider dental consumer information to you every week. It's time to enter Dental School 101 on the Dr. Shoup Show. And you can always learn even more on demand at ddsradio.com. Here's Dr. Randy Shoup.
Well, it is so good to have you here. Thank you very, very much. It is always a pleasure. I'm always honored by the fact that you have chosen to hang out with me. I really appreciate it. And this is one of those questions that has come from you, my great listeners. You have gone to ddsradio.com. And it came about in a roundabout way. Not directly, I want you to talk about this subject. It said, basically in the message, look, I have been listening to you for a long time. And yes, I have had a lot of dental issues my whole life. I've been told I need this. I've not moved forward to fix it. Now I saw somebody else. They told me I need something else. I've not moved forward to fix it. And so basically I have been kicking this dental can down the proverbial road. And I was just told that I am in dire straits, and I've heard your program. I know you do things differently, and you have all kinds of magic, and I can come and get all fixed up, and it'll be wonderful, and it'll be easy, and I want to come see you. And that got my juices all flowing, not because anxious to see somebody that's in bad trouble, but it was really just the crux of how does somebody make a decision? How do you, as a listener, how do you listen to what we do here on the program, and then you work that through to the point where it motivates you to pick up a phone and make an appointment, it motivates you to get in the car and come, and all that constellation of things. So that's what we're going to talk about. And oftentimes it is associated, like now, with New Year's resolution. You have decided, somebody has decided, this is the year I'm going to get all fixed up. And it all is about motivation. What things motivate you? And it always is fascinating to me that there's usually some precipitating event. Some of the events are obtuse. They're obvious. You break a tooth. Something falls out. You have a change in your appearance, a change in something that is uncomfortable or painful. Those are obvious changes. Some of them are very subtle. Some of them are, I'm back in the dating world again, and I was trying to fix myself up and look nice and be sharp and try to, you know, have a good profile. And I realized when I looked at all my pictures that had my smile, I didn't look nearly as good as what I thought I was going to look. There are some things that are much more subtle in terms of that. I had a patient one time came to me. This is probably one of the most delightful, wonderful young ladies I think I have ever met. She was the kindest person on the planet, and she had never had children herself, and she had totally invested herself in all of her nieces and nephews, loved them to death, did tons of things for them. And this lady happened to really, really love iced tea. She had had some old dental work done, old tooth-colored fillings that tended to stain a lot. And one day she was drinking iced tea. One of her nieces crawled up on her knee, looked at her. The lady was smiling at her little niece, having a good time. And she goes, "Oh, you're Aunt Pumpkin Teeth." Because the little girl looked at her teeth. Her teeth were all stained kind of an orangey, pumpkin-y color because of the iced tea. That was the motivator for this young lady to come to the office and let me fix her front teeth so that she was not Aunt Pumpkin Teeth anymore. Everybody is different. There is, in the world of psychology, a Dr. Maslow, and Maslow has created what's called this hierarchy of need. And that is, where do we humans rank things in terms of what we need and what we want? And we aren't able, according to Dr. Maslow, to move to higher levels of need fulfillment until we have satisfied those needs. It's like a big pyramid. It's like a food pyramid. And the most basic needs are obviously food and water and shelter. The next is, mates and mating and family. And then the next is, higher levels of things. You get up to the very, very top where you're ordering ultra deluxe Mercedes and you're buying diamond rings for everybody. Those are the highest level. But none of those things are sustainable until all of the lower level needs are met. Dentistry happens to be about two notches up on the needs scale. So we find people that get initially excited, initially motivated about coming up to the office. They hear an ad, they have a chipped tooth, they have some need that they perceive. They make the appointment, and sometimes that is it. They get cold feet. And they don't keep the appointment or they cancel the appointment. And happily, that doesn't happen very often, but that throws a gigantic monkey wrench into our works. We dedicate, every time somebody makes an appointment, we absolutely, positively dedicate that time to that person. And somebody is waiting in line for that spot. Somebody has called and somebody else has taken the spot and they can't get in. So when somebody calls, takes an appointment time, and then doesn't show up, somebody is being gypped out of that opportunity for us to help them. That throws a gigantic wrench into the works because it screws up somebody else's opportunity. And we hate it when that happens, but we understand that there are certain needs that have to be met before an individual will progress on to the dental needs. And so we do a lot of profiling of our people, not only when they call on the telephone, and by the way, Angela up at our office is an expert at this. I'm pretty darn good, but quite honestly, she's just awesome about this. She's actually a trainer for the DISC, D-I-S-C. And there are a variety of these personality profiling systems that are in existence. We happen to use the DISC. It is the most popular. It's been around for a long time, and it's really just uncannily accurate. And so when you call our office and when we talk to you and interview you, not are we just having a conversation, but we're actually trying to sort out from what you say and how you say it, where you are in this whole Maslow's hierarchy of need, so that we can then figure out what can we do best to help you achieve what you want to achieve. So we don't have casual conversations with anybody. Every conversation that we have with you is based on us trying to ascertain what is going to be the best method we could possibly use so that you can achieve what you want to achieve. You can get the dentistry that you want that is going to make you happy, make you healthy, and fulfill whatever need it is you need to have satisfied. And so it's always interesting when somebody says, I've been listening to you for years and I'm now calling to make my appointment. And it's always just, I have to ask them, and we ask these questions, well, what was there about now? As opposed to, you heard me 2 years ago, why didn't you call then? Or, you've been listening to me for years, why now? Why don't you wait till next year or 2 years from now? And they always usually say there's some precipitating event that has raised dentistry from a higher level of need into an immediate need. And that's always the fascinating part. So if I can help you sort out where you are in the decision process, all the better for you, all the better for us. We get along great. We get together. We fix things. We make them right for you. We make them comfortable. And at the end of the day, the bottom line is we satisfy those needs that you have that motivated you to call in the first place. So if you were the person that came online and went to ddsradio.com and talked about how you'd listened for years and something has come up, we can put you in the queue to where we can satisfy those needs for you. Once a need is satisfied, then it goes away. You don't have to satisfy that need anymore. And isn't that the best way to happen? You don't want to have it. A nagging need that you can never satisfy is called an addiction. No matter how much you do, there's never enough. But if you can satisfy a need that is something fulfilling to you, then all you have to do is satisfy it once. And that's what we want to do. So now, up next, have you ever heard about catching lightning in a bottle or walking on the sun? Impossible? Maybe not. And actually, closer than you think. I'm going to tell you all about it right after this.
You're listening to the Dr. Shoup Show. Exclusive insider info, audio, and video is online now at ddsradio.com. This is your masterclass for navigating all the information that is coming at you every day. What you need to pay attention to. How do historical trends, current day research, and technology affect you and your family's lives?
Well, don't worry. Uncle Randy has your back.
You're listening to the Dr. Shoup Show. And coming up now is Ask the Expert. Submit your questions at ddsradio.com. Here's Dr. Randy Shoup.
Like 7 inches from the midday sun. Well, I hear you whispering the words.
Good to have you here. Thank you very, very much. And yes, it is a hot one. Like 7 inches from the midday sun, we are going to talk about something that has happened in China. China has been working on this for a long time. I saw the research article published about it. Absolutely, positively fascinating. But we're going to talk about fusion, nuclear fusion, and how this is going to be at some point probably what our entire globe runs on. Not wind, not solar, but nuclear fusion. Let's go back, get your pencils and papers ready. This is sometimes going to be technical, but I only do these things because I know you can handle it. I know you'll understand. It's going to be great. It's going to be fine. Thank you for being here. In nuclear reactions, you and I are all very, very familiar with the result of nuclear fission, the splitting of the atom. And that takes place by virtue of an explosion. An explosion, in a sense, blows atoms apart, and the atoms are held together with such massive amounts of energy. The electrons, the protons, the neutrons are all held together in an atom with so much energy that if you are able to get these energetic pieces to blow apart, you wind up with little separate pieces flying around, but the result is you've generated a massive amount of energy. That's how nuclear reactors work. They use uranium, which is a decaying radioactive isotope, and this radioactive decaying isotope gives off electrons and protons, and these particles go flying off. They hit other particles and they cause them to blow apart, and it generates massive amounts of heat. The heat is captured in nuclear reactors in water. The water becomes hot, turns into steam. Steam turns into turbines, which spins wheels and generates electricity. So nuclear fission, the splitting of atoms, is turned into heat, which is turned into steam, which turns into electricity. The downside is if you don't control that reaction, you get Fukushima. If you don't control that reaction, you get Chernobyl, because it requires a very, very careful regulation of the amount of ionizing radiation that comes off, all of this radioactive material, and you control it. That's why they have gigantic control rooms. But it can be very successfully controlled. But at the end of the day, you wind up with a whole lot of radioactive water. You wind up with a whole lot of radioactive waste when this stuff is kind of used up. Now, what do you do with it? On the other hand, scientists have been saying that they have another way of doing this. Rather than fission, rather than splitting the atom, let's do fusion. Let's join atoms together. And when you take an atom over here on the left and an atom over here on the right, and you cram them together, they will join, they will fuse together, ergo the name fusion. So they fuse together. And when they fuse together, they rearrange themselves and they go to a lower energy state. But to do that, they have to give off energy, which again is heat. This has happened in China. Listen to this. The experimental advanced superconductive tokamak, which is called EAST, experimental advanced superconducting tokamak, known as the artificial sun, reached temperatures of 70 million degrees centigrade during an experiment in China. The ultimate aim of developing the artificial sun device is to deliver nearly limitless clean energy by mimicking the natural reactions that occur within stars. Our sun is a star. Nuclear fusion has been touted as the holy grail of clean energy production. However, it remains a long way from being realized outside of the laboratory, despite decades of research into the technology. Not only China, but the United Kingdom is also planning to build a nuclear fusion power station as part of its new green industrial revolution, with a short list of 5 locations for the site to be announced. So this contraption that the Chinese have built at the cost of over $50 billion, and they've been working on this for a number of years, it is now up and functional. They can go to, in this creation of an artificial sun, not the temperature of the sun, but 10 times hotter than the sun. They can take this machine, and here's how they do it. They don't have a bottle per se, or a furnace, or a fireplace, anything. This is all done exciting a plasma inside a gigantic magnetic field. So this thing is kind of floating in the air. It's not touching anything. And it's small. It's not gigantic. It's probably the whole reaction, the whole center of this thing is less than the size of a golf ball. But this gadget can be raised to 216 million degrees Fahrenheit. And they've been able to sustain this for 100 seconds. And it's approximately 10 times hotter than the sun. They can turn it down so it's not 10 times hotter than the sun, but 5 times hotter than the sun, and run it for about 20 minutes before it all burns up. They can even turn it down more to where it's roughly the temperature of the sun. And they're trying to run this machine now for 3 hours. Here's been the big problem with fusion. It sounds too good to be true. And it really kind of is, because at our level of technology right now, yes, it is a completely safe reaction. There's no radiation given off whatsoever. Yes, there is no contaminated byproducts from it. You don't wind up with a bunch of radioactive material that you have to figure out what to do with for the next 30,000 years. And yes, it is controllable. There is no worry that it will run amok or run out of control and go crazy. It doesn't do that. And the fuel that they use is hydrogen, the most abundant element in the universe. Water is H2O, 2 hydrogens and 1 oxygen. You could take water and feed the 2 hydrogens into this generator and get virtually all the energy that you could possibly want. You have oxygen left over. Gee, that's not so bad. But the problem is, with our level of technology, it takes more energy in than you get out at this stage of the game. There have been many scientists that have said we can do what's called cold fusion. Virtually, I've seen one scientist say he can take a quart mason jar and, with the proper circumstances, make cold fusion and a bench top. Absolutely fantasy, folly, it's nuts, it's crazy, it's physically, scientifically impossible. What you have to do to get fusion to work is you have to have massive amounts of pressure and massive amounts of heat. And here on Earth, in order to take hydrogen and condense it to massive amounts of pressure and massive amounts of heat, you have to input electricity. You have to input a magnetic field. And it takes more electricity to create this instrument and make it work than you get back out. So it's backwards. It takes more energy to make this experiment run than we get back out right now. But we're all working on it. Everybody wants it to work. So there are scientific places on the Earth right now that are 10 times hotter than the midday sun, right here on good old Earth. Yes, we are trying to catch lightning in a bottle, and it's coming. And when it does, it will revolutionize our entire planet. But we're just not there yet. So keep your fingers crossed. Keep catching lightning in a bottle, folks. We need it. Now, up next, you get to meet my good buddy Adam. Years ago, Adam made a huge investment in himself, and it paid him massive dividends. He's in sales, and it worked like a charm. And then he had an accident, and he was willing to drive 3 hours for Uncle Randy to fix his boo-boo. He'll tell you all about it, and why would he drive 3 hours? Right after this.
You're listening to the Dr. Shoup Show. Exclusive insider info, audio, and video is online now at ddsradio.com. Hundreds of Dr. Randy Shoup's patients have volunteered to be on the Dr. Shoup Show. Why? Because there's a passion to tell their story. And every story has a similar tone.
I am just a fan.
There's simply no other dentist in the Midwest that approaches dental care like Dr. Randy Shoup. We're online at ddsradio.com. And now, here's Dr. Randy Shoup.
Well, it is so good to have you all here. I really appreciate it. Thank you very, very much. And you get to meet a buddy of mine. We've known each other kind of a long time. We knew each other a while ago, and then there was a blast from the past. He calls and comes into the office. Adam, how are you, man?
I am very well. Very well, buddy. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much.
Good.
Well, we don't necessarily need to delve into the particular details, but you had an accident with one of the veneers that we did in a group of veneers. What was it, 10 years ago?
It was 15 years ago, Randy.
How time flies.
And I was doing the math. It's 15 years.
Okay, so these things, and I want everybody to understand, you can't see Adam, of course, but if you have seen any pictures of a bodybuilder, The Rock, anybody, you know, you laugh and everything, but this guy really, really, really is an avid athlete. And so if anybody were to stress or clinch or beat up on dental work, it would be him. And these things have held on for 15 years. One of them cracked. Why on earth did you call me and drive 3.5 hours each way?
I can tell you why.
Okay.
You know, so for the past 15 years, I have been involved in a lot of sales training. So I work for a manufacturer, and we train, and it's very intense training with over 1,000 salespeople a year, right? During this time, okay, in the past 11 years I've been doing that, there has not been one single person of all this time that looked at me and asked me if my teeth were fake, if they were veneers, if I had them done or anything. And to me, that's the biggest compliment ever, because what once was an insecurity of mine, which wasn't that big of a deal, but it was my insecurity, was gone. And I didn't have to go through the headache or the explanation of why I did it and what they were, because they were so good that literally they looked like my actual real teeth. So when you ask me why I would drive 3 hours, literally that pales in comparison to that alone. So that's why.
Well, I appreciate the heck out of that. Yeah, I tell people when we do cosmetic cases and so forth, we have folks that will come in every once in a while and they go, I want the whitest teeth you can make me. And I just cringe because the ugliest thing on the planet. But if I tell people, look, you're going to go into a room and people are going to look at you and they're going to look at you and go, you know, you look great. What have you done? Have you changed your hair or you got new clothes or something? If they can't figure out what it is, that's my best compliment.
And you know what? It's funny because when somebody has an insecurity of something about themselves, right, even if it's not that big of a deal, people will tell you, oh, it's not that bad, not that bad. Well, it's my insecurity or it's your insecurity. So when you get unsolicited praise for that insecurity, it goes away. You know what I mean?
Well, sure, yeah. I mean,
that's what happened. It was gone.
I am happy as the Dickens that was your result. I mean, that's what we always shoot for and we try to do. Yeah, and I'm not, I mean, Adam may have had these insecurities. Great looking guy, fit as can be, and is in indeed a very important and big sales area of the world. And that's your smile is your calling card. I mean, that's how you look. People make all kinds of instant assumptions about you just based on how you walk into a room.
And how you walk into a room is not just based upon how you look. It's based upon how you feel like you look. That's the difference. But yeah, I looked fine before, and it wasn't that big of a deal, but to me it was. So when you corrected it, per se, then in my own mind and my, you know, my vision, it was gone. So it didn't exist anymore. That was the whole key.
I really appreciate that. I mean, that's really a fun thing. And now, once we got reconnected 15 years down the road,
right.
Now you laid on me, hey, I want to do some more stuff too. So this is going to be great.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, this is super. So, hey, listen, I'm really appreciative that you spent some time and would tell this story, because so many people have, as you well know, so many people have certain insecurities, certain things that they may not ever tell anybody else, but it gets them, and it then changes their behavior to where everybody thinks, well, they just act this way. But if you were to change that thing, they would act differently. You try to get salespeople to act differently, overcoming maybe some old tapes or learning that they have.
Yes. And one thing I want to add, Randy, if I can, is that if anybody that is listening to this is on the fence of doing veneers or some type of cosmetic adjustment, do it. Flat out do it, even if you have to finance it. I was 22 years old when I got these done, and I had to finance it through, believe it or not, through my financial institution at whatever percentage it was. But I can tell you right now, even through all my investments now, with all that I've learned, that by far, that $4,000 or $5,000, whatever I spent, right, was by far the highest rate of return on any investment that I ever, ever did in my entire life. And that's a fact. So if you're on the verge or the fence, just do it. You'll thank me later. Trust me.
Well, seriously. They'll thank you later. Hey, Adam, man, thank you so very, very much. That was really cool. I appreciate it. Thanks for being on the program. I know you're a super busy guy. I won't keep you any longer. I'll see you at the office next time. But thanks for sharing your story. I am absolutely sure somebody is listening to this, and they're going to say to themselves, that sounds just like me.
Yes, just do it. Trust me. Just do it. Don't wait. Just do it. I'm serious.
Man, you are the best. Listen, I'll talk to you soon. I'll see you at the office soon. Be careful, my friend.
You too, buddy. Thanks,
all right, thanks. All right, bye. Well, there you have it. I hope you enjoyed listening to that as much as I always enjoy bringing this information to you. Be sure to go to ddsradio.com and give me your suggestions for ideas and concepts you want me to explore here on the program. Happy to do it for you, and it really makes everything so much more exciting when I know I'm speaking directly to at least one person out there. It's really fun. Every year we do our annual planning session up at the office. We just completed it, and we are on the calendar, not in pencil, but in ink. The last week of May, first week of June, is when we're going to go back on our Kenya mission trip. So I need you to go to kinddentistry.org or go to DDS Radio and make your contributions. Help us help these kids. So until you and I chat again next time, be sure to brush and floss.
Keep on smiling.